Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for MacBreak Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is MacBreak Weekly, episode 233, recorded on February 8th, 2011. And you're our Lord 2011, Angry Gods. This episode of MacBreak Weekly is brought to you by GoToMeeting. Bring people across the country or around the world together with the web conferencing tool that's the best of the best. GoToMeeting. For your free 30-day trial, visit gotomeeting.com/MacBreak. And by FreshBooks, the easy online invoicing service that gets you paid quickly and makes you look professional. Get started with a free package at FreshBooks.com. And by Hover.com. Hover is a domain name registration and management that's simple. For 10% off your new domain, go to MacBreak.hover.com. And be sure to check out .co domains at Hover, now $15 through February 12th. Welcome once again. It's another episode of MacBreak Weekly. Hello to our friends, to our enemies, and to the great preponderance of listeners to whom we are largely indifferent. I'm Andy Notko of the Chicago Sun-Times, and I have with me an all-star cast. Making up for some notable absences, Leo is, this is not a joke, in South America harassing penguins. He has special permits to harass them. He brought an arrangement of pointy and blunt sticks with which to poke them. There is some science involved. I didn't want to ask for fear of being called to testify later on. And Alex is somewhere else on the planet doing incredible and positive things. But joining me this week, again, stellar all-star cast from MacWorld.com, the website and the magazine, Chris Breen, who is the what's the level above publisher? I mean, it's sort of like all they had to do was say Chris Breen now because you're so closely associated with MacWorld.
Pretty much. Now, I'm trying to get to the point where it's simply Breen, so that like a Notko, like Pogue, like Cher, like Madonna, I aspire to a single name.
I understand that you're so big that on Twitter, not only was Chris Breen taken, not only was the real Chris Breen taken, but you had to go the really, I promise you, actual Chris Breen, because people are just squatting on that name. It's part of the, I mean, you are such an expert on iOS and all those devices that, I mean, it's going to happen. I mean, you got to expect, it's almost a compliment, really, isn't it?
Well, clearly that's going to happen. And I check, you know, who unfollowed me on Twitter every so often. And I see that, you know, just like Justin Bieber, I mean, Justin's still aspiring to this level, but I see these, you know, feet of Breen, ankles of Breen, tibia of Breen, uvula of Breen. And naturally it attracts people like a swarm of hornets. And then they discover it's not me and it's actually not my uvula. And that's it. They lose all their followers at once. So actually, you can find me.
I'm just going to move on now. That's great. I think I'm just going to move on. But we are blessed to have two publishing titans. We have Tanya Angst, the publisher at Grand Poobah, editor in chief, everything of Take Control eBooks. Tanya, how is it there on the with Neo and the rest of the gang from the Matrix in the white void?
We're living in the. In the white void, we're deeply descended into the digital world. We only come out once a week for fresh air and water, and everything's great. We're enjoying the winter very much, and it's very fun to be here.
Can you see the I'm a Mac, I'm a PC commercial being filmed to your left?
No, just no.
Okay. Filling out our foursome, we have you're interning at Mac User, and you just got the broad. I'm glad they kept you on when they switched to Macworld. I haven't heard much from you since then.
It was all a clerical error, actually. And I also squat on Chris Breen on a regular basis. So,
ow.
what is your title these days, Jason?
Well, it's anything you want it to be. I like to go by Jason from Macworld.
I really think you need to perfect your piercing, like, you know, your piercing perfume model's glare when you're going to, I just go by Jason.
Blue Steel. Yes. Editorial director, I believe, which means that editorial. I get to direct editors. I used to be the executive editor, which meant I got to execute them, but they don't let me do that anymore.
it just degenerated into slap fights and no one got killed. So they had to give you ease you out there. Okay, well, we got some really interesting stories this week. Obviously, in terms of new cool Apple stuff, this is the week that the first Verizon iPhones started hitting the hands of those people who were reviewing them and those people who ordered them on February 2nd. More importantly, this is the time that we can actually look at them side by side, use them side by side, and see if there's really any practical difference between a Verizon iPhone and an AT&T iPhone, or if we were just whining and complaining over pretty much nothing over the past 2 or 3 years, and the general constant of the universe is that all wireless carriers suck. Jason, you've been playing for one for a while. What were your impressions?
Well, it's an iPhone 4. I mean, I think that's the number one impression. It's got a couple differences. It's, the black bars on the sides are in a slightly different location, and they're slightly more symmetrical.
Damn,
and there's
it.
No SIM card slot. I mean, there's so little different. The real difference, it's a slightly different build of the iOS, so it's got a feature that isn't yet on other iPhones, although I suspect it will be very soon. And the network. I mean, it's really about the Verizon network. And in my testing, I only tested in San Francisco. It was more reliable than AT&T's network, except at my house where I have no bars of Verizon. And the AT&T network was faster. So that seems to be the trade-off, but it'll vary from city to city.
Now, did you try there's been some controversy over the claims that, well, we all know that it's a CDMA phone, so you won't be able to do a phone call and use the internet at the same, use the web at the same time. David Pogue did his review and claimed that. And of course, yep. The virulent battle of New York Times posters who put down both their red wine and their claret in order to complain that he had his head up his butt. Have you found that to be a limitation?
It is a limitation. The original iPhone on Edge only had the same limitation. I guess what I'd say is I'm not sure how many situations you've got where you want to be on the phone and on the data network simultaneously. Just, I guess, like if you're on a conference call and it's really boring and you want to check your email, something like that, that sort of makes sense. But once you start using that personal hotspot feature, that becomes a little bit more of an issue because you can have up to 5 devices sharing your internet connection using the personal hotspot. And the moment your phone rings, that's it for the internet until you either send that to voicemail or, answer the call and talk and then hang up. The hotspot kind of persists, but it can't get on the internet. And that, to me, that's the place where it starts to break down.
Now, that's the interesting feature that really has got me attracted to the Verizon iPhone or iOS 4.3, if the hotspot feature should show up there. That's the one where it turns the iPhone into essentially a MiFi. Now, are we back in the days of like 1992, 1993, when like everyone in the world who had a modem had to say, Bob, stay off the phone. You just knocked me off the internet. Like, what happens when if you're using the hotspot feature and you get a phone call? Is it the same thing as what happens when you get a phone call on the AT phone where there's a polite sort of thing saying, okay, do you want to stop downloading News of the World and talk to your aunt?
No. It basically just drops the connection and then the phone rings and that's it. And so actually this leads to an interesting point. If you were doing something like using the internet hotspot, the personal hotspot, to do something like Mac Break Weekly, where you needed an internet connection and you didn't have one, so you used the Verizon network instead. If one of your enemies knew your phone number, they would actually just be able to call you and knock you off your connection. Just by ringing the phone, it doesn't even you can't send it to voicemail. The ring itself knocks you off the internet. So don't tell your enemies your phone number.
I think you're severely misjudging the character or the people who use this internet. I think the people are going to know. It sounds like a problem, but it really isn't. So long as everybody's polite and I think that's going to work out. Chris, have you tried the new Verizon iPhone yet?
I have not. I've been in the presence of Jason, who's touched one, and that's as close as I've gotten to this thing. So
I carry some of the network with me.
He does, and I just sort of put my hands near him, and I can feel the vibration and the enhanced quality of the calling experience just by being near him. So I'm actually thinking of maybe I'll jump because I get no AT&T coverage here, and I went out and purchased one of AT&T's microcells. Apparently, they're giving the things away for free now because they are so desperate to keep people. And so I can sort of make a very poor phone call from my home, but I've checked Verizon's coverage map, and apparently it's just Verizon everywhere here, that there's a tower under my basement, perhaps. So I'd like the opportunity to actually drag one over here and find out if I can make a call with it. That may compel me to jump over.
I guess this is a good chance to test your friendship between yourself and Jason. If you were to invite him over to dinner or for coffee once in a while, It'd be clear that you're exploiting him for his Verizon phone, but still.
That's not a bad idea. And if, I'm sure he's not listening, so I'll just say this, but he's a hard guy to have a meal with because he's constantly on the internet with his phone. But now that I know his number and he's, there diddling away during our meal, I can instead, knock him off the line. So that was a good trip.
Chris, did you mention my name? I was distracted.
No. Oh. Yeah.
So that's actually a great tip. If you have someone who is annoying you by getting all over the internet while eating dinner, all you have to do is call them to knock them off the line. There's probably even going to be an app that will repeatedly call someone to keep them from using the internet.
Actually, that's a good point. That's exactly the reason why corporate IT departments are going to be issuing Verizon iPhones to all their users instead of Blackberries, because that way they can sort of monitor every single person who's Twittering or on Facebook or doing live podcasts. They're saying something that's against the company's interest. Beep. Hi, Saul. Just wanted to check and say you're doing a great job telling everybody about how lax our inspection standards are over at the plant. Keep up the good work. And I want to show you some video of my kid. Come on. Do your little act for Uncle Saul. Uncle Saul, come on. Give him a little bit of cheer. He's going to be fired tomorrow, because of all those stupid things he was saying.
We need a new word. It's like a Verizon filibuster. Something.
Well, think that given this limitation, that there would be an option on the phone to immediately send to voicemail, or so that this doesn't happen. You can say, I know I'm going to be on the internet for the next half hour, so little slider.
Just to be able to have that option. I think you might be able to set it to forward, and maybe that would work. But you're right. Just a slider that would say, okay, I don't want, when I'm using data, I don't want my phone to ring. I just want it to go to voicemail, but I don't think it's there.
Right. Tanya, I mean, we're dealing with two people who live in San Francisco, which is one of those hip metro urban areas. I live just outside a Puritan fishing colony, and you live up in the wilds of New York next to a pond, I believe. So is Verizon in the future for you?
Some serious testing is in the future for me, and sooner than I'd thought. I thought I was going to hold off for the iPhone 5 because I'm the next person at my company who is getting the new iPhone. But my iPhone 3GS is sort of broken, so I need to get a new phone soon, and I need to look really carefully at the coverage. I live in Ithaca, New York, very close to Cornell University, and we have great coverage at Cornell, but pretty much fades out dramatically from there. So at my son's elementary school, cell phones didn't work. Certainly that cut down on the kids needing to bring cell phones to school. But I need to do some serious research and figure out which phone's going to work the best for me. Probably what I really need is some kind of a special situation where you could have the AT&T phone and the Verizon phone kind of sandwiched together in a case, and then it would magically, the one that you want would just work. And of course, I'll just speculate and say maybe that will happen with an iPhone 5, but that would be sort of fantasy speculation, I guess.
Now, what's the big decision point for me for the Verizon iPhone? We are dealing with a very, very predictable release cycle in which it would be news if Apple did not release the iPhone 5 in June during WWDC. Right now, there's a rumor that WWDC is going to be in on June 5th. It's amazing to me that there's so many people who are rushing out to buy the iPhone 4 right now. I mean, they've all waited for 3 years for a Verizon iPhone. They can't wait another three months to get, the one that sort of just gently hovers in a beatific sort of cloud above your hands, which is rumored to be a feature of the iPhone 5. It's rumored because this is a well-known podcast, and I'm starting that rumor right now. Tanya, you're in the position where you actually kind of need a new iPhone. Can you hold out for 3 months?
My 3GS is broken to the point where the Wi-Fi radio doesn't work, the Bluetooth radio doesn't work, and as I found out on a recent trip to San Francisco, the 3G radio doesn't work. So all I can do is connect with Edge.
And what have you been doing to this phone?
I don't know what I've been doing to it. It's terrible. And at first I thought, I don't really need Wi-Fi. I'm mostly at home, and if I need to use the internet, I'll just use my iPad. And then I saw it. oh, I only really need Bluetooth for testing stuff, so I just won't have Bluetooth. But then when I was actually in a mobile urban environment where they have decent cell phone connectivity, I couldn't even do that on my phone. So before I travel the next time, I need a new phone that, you know, because who knows? I mean, the whole thing is just sort of falling apart. So if I lose even my edge surface, then, you know, it's not even going to work for calls.
Have you heard of the iPod Touch before? Because really, it does all those things. And when you're in San Francisco, you can't make a call on an iPhone anyway. So you might as well have that.
I had to leave the iPod Touch home with my 12-year-old.
Well, yeah.
Well, I really think it's going to be a case where it's going to take us a couple of weeks to have hundreds of thousands of people with these things in the wild who can really do comparisons between here's the coverage I was getting on my old phone on the AT&T network, and here's the coverage I'm getting now in Verizon, because it's just such a subjective thing, isn't it? If you're in an area in which you're getting better AT&T coverage, that's really the decision for you. If you're in an area that's getting better Verizon coverage, that's a decision for you. But I really think the real reviews aren't going to come for another about a month or so before we can figure out, really, is the network the big difference, or is it just a sticker that we care about? Let's see. There is, of course, there are a bunch of iFixit teardowns revealed that the rumored Qualcomm combined GSM CDMA baseband chip is indeed present inside that phone. So in theory, if the right number of electrons were put inside this phone in exactly the right order, this exact same handset could maybe sort of work on the AT&T network as well, which maybe won't be too much of a surprise. I don't think a lot of us were thinking that Apple would have two completely different sets of hardware for two completely separate sets of customers. Chris, does this make sense to you?
Oh, absolutely. I think that this is Apple's opportunity to throw the new chip into a new phone for them. And probably that's the same chip we're going to see in the iPhone 5. It completely makes sense, particularly if they want to make this a world phone so that you take it overseas and you don't, you know, GSM is everywhere and CDMA not so much. It would be very nice if I were able to land in a foreign country with this phone that will do both and immediately switch over. And then, you know, naturally, Apple would have to make a deal with the two carriers, AT&T and Verizon, so that they would get their pound of flesh when you switch over to the other network. But, yeah, I mean, it would be silly for them to make two different phones that had two different chipsets in it. So standardize on that so that you can use it anywhere. I don't know that they're going to go to the point where you can say, you know, I'm really getting terrible coverage here with AT&T, so let me just flip this switch here. Now I can make a call on Verizon. And plus, again, there's no SIM card in the thing, so we'll see.
That would be the real death match when we get to the point where I've bought this phone, this iPhone, I'm now out of contract, and now I have the free choice of switching this exact same phone from Verizon to AT&T or AT&T to Verizon, which actually brings up another death match that I want to discuss with you guys. There's the question of AT&T's network versus Verizon's network, but now we also can figure out the Verizon "Can you hear me now" guy versus John Hodgman as the "I'm a PC" guy. Let's say that they're both in sort of the squared circle, sort of bare knuckle death match sort of thing. collegiate boxing rules. I've got a few stats here. The Verizon network guy, 5'8.5". He is 165. I'm sorry. Later commercials, he's 165 pounds. Early commercial, he looked more like 145 to 150. Reach of 27 inches. He usually trains with 10-ounce gloves. John Hodgman, he has been to Portugal. I don't know if that'll factor into your decisions, but he has been there. Let's start off with Tanya. Who do you think would win?
Well, okay.
Oh, by the way, we're looking for either death or submission. That's also
going to be a big coming at it. From the female perspective, I first had to ask myself, was either of them seriously hot? And no. So I couldn't really give either one of them a hot factor to help them win. So then I just thought that the Verizon guy travels. He's been to jungles. He's been to Antarctica, all these places. And the "I'm a PC" guy basically stays home and runs his PC. So I'm going to have to give it to the Verizon guy.
Jason, what do you think?
Well, first off, I have to question your premise, because you said that we're using collegiate boxing rules, and yet somehow it's going to the death. That's not part of collegiate boxing, Andy. What kind of colleges did you go to?
It isn't a college I went to.
Okay.
I'm sorry. You went to one of those fancy schmancy, oh, we're doing a seminar on a yacht today.
Yeah, that's definitely what I had.
We had a fight for every A.
So I also like how you slipped it in there that the Verizon guy has gotten heavier over time, which was really noticeable in that new Verizon iPhone ad where he I can hear you now.
He's handsome at any weight. We're just saying it might give him a tactical advantage in that if he can use that to, you know, that extra inertia. It's just physics. It's nothing but style.
So breaking this down scientifically, I look in the cold, soulless eyes of the Verizon I can hear you now guy and say Hodgman.
Okay, we've got one Verizon guy, one Hodgman. Crisp.
I'm going with Hodgman as well. I think he's a smarter guy. I think the Verizon guy's kind of a meat and potatoes guy. Hodgman doesn't need to ask these simple questions like, can you hear me? He wants to explain how you can hear. And I think he's like the Muhammad Ali in the last part of his career. He doesn't have to sting like a bee. He doesn't have to be fast anymore. I think he can pull a rope-a-dope and outthink the Verizon guy. So when the Verizon guy thinks he's got him on the ropes, Hodgman jumps out and slams him to the canvas, and I think so. I give it to Hodgman.
I will also give it to Hodgman by vote to a split decision of 3-1, chiefly because Tanya had a really good point there in that the Verizon guy, more of a world traveler, has been through more environments, so he's got more experience. He's got more of the know-how. Hodgman, however, as a PC, he's used to a lifetime of abuse. So the rope-a-dope strategy, you can just sort of like take those punches for a good 13, 14 rounds, let the Verizon guy tire himself out, and then one blue screen of death, and boom, right to the kisser, and he's on the canvas. Okay, well, now it's time for a commercial break. We're going to thank our good friends at FreshBooks via a recording provided by Alex Lindsay.
Thanks, Andy. Of course, this episode is brought to you by FreshBooks. Now, if you're a small business owner, and I'm a small business owner, and I started very, very small. So I started with, I was actually about this high, like just not very, very small, very, very small. And dealing with invoicing is just something that drives you crazy. You love actually doing it. You love actually doing the work. But the invoicing, the paperwork, is the part that you don't really like to do. I don't like to do it. I was having to do it this morning and was very upset about the whole process. And so dealing with all this paperwork, and specifically the invoicing, is just, it's uncomfortable, it's tedious. And FreshBooks.com makes all of that much, much easier. Now, you can just upload a logo, so you can quickly and easily create your own invoices that have your logo on them. They look professional. They look like you mean business. I don't know if I really mean business, but they make you look like that you mean business. You can have your clients just download PDFs. You can even have your clients pay online without having to deal with anything else with a PayPal account, or there's a bunch of other, there's like 11 different ways that you can handle it via credit card. So there's a lot of different ways you can do that. You can receive your payments for your invoices, as I said. Your clients don't have to send you a check. There's all this electronic processing that's available, or they can. And you can even send them snail mail invoices from FreshBooks.com. So there's just a lot of ways that you can make sure this happens. You can have them do, FreshBooks will let you actually do, auto like late payment stuff, you know, saying you're late and we'd like to, you know, have the money. So anyway, but you don't have to do that. You don't have to go through that. You don't even have to feel guilty about it. It's just an automated process that you can just say, hey, that's just the way the system works. So anyway, FreshBooks.com, the thing to always remember, it is really not how much money you're making if you're a small consultant. It's when you're making it. Cash flow is everything. You have to make sure that money is constantly coming in. I used to have bills when I was an independent artist. Now we have like people and all this stuff and everything else. But when I was an independent artist, I had bills. It's not that my clients paid net 90. I just invoiced 90 days after I actually finished the project, because it was just like, oh, I'll get around to it tomorrow, and then you didn't get it done. Making this easy is a huge piece of you becoming successful in this market, and FreshBooks.com is on your side. They're going to really make this a lot easier. You got to check it out. So they got a special offer for you. You're not going to believe this. All right, so they've got a special FreshBooks. Of course, it's free today. You can have up to 3 clients, and I think I had 3 clients for like the first 2 years that I was actually doing work. You could do it for free. You could actually have this for free. It takes about a minute to set up the account. You can go to FreshBooks.com, sign up for a free account. When they ask you how'd you hear about FreshBooks, make sure that they understand that it was MacBreak. MacBreak did that for you. Every day, FreshBooks is giving away a birthday cake. So if one of our audience members, if it's your birthday, or Even if it isn't your birthday, just sign up. So, you know, sign up there. They're going to draw a name every day for an entire month. And they're going to, you know, send you a birthday cake in the mail. You won't have to come pick it up. I don't even know where FreshBooks is, and you're still going to get the birthday cake. So definitely check it out. Make sure that they know that Mac Break sent you. And it's FreshBooks.com. If you are a small business, you have got to check it out. All right. Back to the regularly scheduled program.
Our next big story is last week, of course, coincidentally, one day after we recorded Mac Break last week, The Daily made its big debut. That's the iPad-only digital magazine, digital newspaper, daily newspaper produced by Rupert Murdoch and his friends. Big launch event. We've had a chance to download it and use it. We've been hearing a lot about this for several weeks and several months, and I was expecting something a little bit nicer, but I was kind of surprised that the page turns aren't quite as flashy, aren't quite as smooth as what we'd see even on an app like Flipbook. The content is nice. I think it's all going to come down to the content. There were a whole bunch of social media features, a lot of which didn't work, or at least when I first tried it on the first day, there was a picture that I wanted to retweet. Thought that, okay, well, let's do the social thing. Let's be part of the conversation. You click a button. There's a button where you just simply tap that button and say, okay, Facebook, Twitter, whatever you want, please help us promote our magazine. And all it did was simply give me a blank tweet form that let me simply describe, okay, I'm reading The Daily and I'm seeing a picture of a snow guy and there's a thing with a funny say, as opposed to, let's say, a link with the actual image that I wanted to link to, which I thought was one of those things that you show it to the developer, shows it for the first time to the people that they're working for, and the person says, you know what, I really think that should link or something. But really, it's more of a discussion on publishing on the iPad. And Tanya, as one of the pioneers of digital publishing, one of the first houses to simply say, we are a digital publishing house with the Take Control series, what's your attitude on The Daily? Do you think what do you think they're doing right? What do you think they're doing wrong? And what new features and new infrastructure do you think Apple has created that folks like you and other publishers will be able to take advantage of?
Well, what I think they're doing right is trying to think about how a large news organization with a lot of resources behind it can move into the digital era, because that's definitely what's happening. Especially on the iPad, one thing that I noticed with my business was before the iPad came out, people were not so sure about reading ebooks. They definitely were very polite and very hesitant about asking questions about if an ebook would work on an iPhone or a Kindle or some kind of unusual device. And they were very patient. As soon as the iPad came out, the attitude of customers changed pretty much overnight. And then what they wanted was they wanted their ebooks on their iPad right now, and they wanted it to work seamlessly and beautifully. So I'm sure a lot of publishers, regardless of whether it was ebooks, magazines, or newspapers, started hearing that. And I think people expect their iPad to work like a sophisticated reader for all kinds of media. So I think The Daily was right on target with targeting the iPad. And I also think that they were on target with taking their the status of their publisher and their money and going to Apple and saying, hey, we got to work on this subscription model here because we are going to spend a vast amount of money developing our app and setting up our content management system and hiring employees. And we have to be able to make a profit on it. And so I think it's great that they and other publishers have been able to have conversations with Apple. Now, I'm a vastly smaller publisher, so we don't have a huge amount of resources. And my other reaction to The Daily is actually kind of a profound frustration, because I feel as though they completely missed the mark. I think that most people who read news on the iPad are people who went down the rabbit hole, if you will, of reading stuff online a long time ago. And we expect our online media to be deeply intertwined with our social networking experience and to be deeply intertwined with other websites and media venues. And so The Daily is just kind of sitting there on its own island on the iPad. And I think the photographs in the daily are pretty gorgeous, but the content itself doesn't really seem to be adding very much to the conversation that's happening online about all kinds of things. It's not really unique or special content, and it's not so exceptionally wonderful of an application that I think people are going to stop reading the way they already do online to spend time with the daily. So for me, especially because I personally, I'm a fountain of ideas about digital publishing. You know, we could do this, we could do that. You know, if we had $1 million, what would we do with it? And I felt disappointed that they had so much money and the ear of Steve Jobs. And it really just feels like they took a kind of a newspaper, a very traditional newspaper model, and just kind of added a few e-features. And I don't think that they added anything particularly even modern in the way of electronic features. It just felt... it felt, for all the money and people behind it, very disappointing to me. And I hope that they hear feedback like this and find out how they can integrate what they're doing better with what everybody else is doing.
That's an interesting part of this. Jason, Macworld has just launched their own digital edition, pretty ambitious digital edition. And Macworld's digital edition and The Daily and New York Times and a whole bunch of other publications have gotten me sort of wondering, to what extent do we really need to reinvent how stories are told and how news and articles are presented? On the one hand, I do like it when I see articles presented in a dynamic way where you can see the relationships not only with this story, but with other stories that have been told a day, a week, a month, a year ago in the past, and connections to other sources of information. On the other hand, one of the most important news reading apps that I have is simply Instapaper, the ability to simply take any web page I have on my Mac that I'm reading and just simply put it in the buffer and just make essentially just a pretty much scrolling ebook version of it that I can then read on my iPad. What do you think about really the challenges of making a digital version of what has been a style of magazine that's been hasn't been changed since the days of the New Yorker in the 20s?
Well, I mean, there's a lot there. Let me see. One of the things is
answer any of those questions in any order you want.
I'll answer them in a random order. I will shuffle through them. One of the things is about, you talk about doing a magazine in the digital version. A lot of the first magazines we saw come out for the iPad were essentially print versions of a magazine brought onto digital. And maybe the page sizes were weird, like Wired had a sort of tall page you could scroll down. But I never really thought that made a lot of sense, because it was like, what I always say is, it's like the early days of TV when they would bring cameras into a theater and they'd shoot a stage play, because it's the old medium getting stuck on the new medium. And that's not really right. You need to find the right thing to put on the new medium. So, you know, Macworld's app, I mean, we do have a digital replica that you can get through the Zinio app that's the magazine, except on your iPad. But when we decided to develop our app, and let me tell you, I wish I had a $30 million budget like The Daily, we decided to go with something that's actually a little bit more like a newspaper. So it's kind of funny. Macworld, as a magazine, has an app that looks like a newspaper because it's fed from a lot of the same sources as our website, whereas The Daily is a newspaper that looks more like a magazine. You keep sort of calling it a magazine, and there's a reason for that. It's very magazine-y. So, but you know, one of the things is about who your audience is, and I think that has a lot to do with when we look at The Daily, how we judge it. What audience are they trying to reach? There isn't, you know, one distribution mechanism for everybody, right? So from my perspective at Macworld, some people are going to read our website, some people are going to read our print magazine, some people are going to download our app and read it that way. Or they might just stumble onto links on Flipboard or save them with Instapaper. And there isn't going to be one single solution for all of this. And when you think of it that way, I think you look at The Daily and say, what are they trying to do here? And it's interesting. My conception of what they were going to do with The Daily was based on how I would build a newspaper for me. And that's not what they built. They built, like, if you look at the content of it, it's very much like a USA Today style newspaper. It's short stories. There's not a lot of depth. The photos are great. You know, it's much more like the New York Post or the USA Today, and that's okay. I guess what they're trying to do is reach an audience. My guess is that it's an older audience. It's people who were saying, hey, if I get an iPad, can I get a newspaper? Can I drop my newspaper subscription? I don't think they are approaching the like tech-savviest early adopters for the iPad. I think they're looking for the people who are in that second wave who get an iPad and aren't very technical and want something that is like their newspaper. And like I said, I think that maybe is an older audience too. So a lot of us who are judging the Daily may not be in their target audience. I will say, to Tanya's point, I think that one of the great failings of the Daily right now, and they've got lots of opportunity to fix it, is the inability to dig down for more. Like, they have a news brief section in each of their sections. And I think day two, one of the stories was that the NASA Keepler probe found, you know, thousands of exoplanet possibilities nearby in the galaxy. And it was a 50-word blurb. Well, why not put a link on that story and all the other little blurbs that you've got if you care enough to read more about it? But in the Daily, it's a dead end. There's a little tiny blurb, and then they're assuming that all you want is that because that's all the space they've got. And those two ideas, the idea that we decide whether you want more or not, and we have run out of space, are so old media ways of thinking, and that's what shocked me about it. I could throw in that they threw in a Sudoku puzzle and a crossword puzzle too. You know, there are apps for that. I'm not sure. The only reason you put those in there is because 20th century print newspapers had those kind of features. So that's what shocked me. Is really
we're missing the family circus. Really, if they want to be taken seriously as a new, you need the family circus.
It's the old media thinking that shocked me, because the app has got, it's doing a lot of really interesting things, and you can see that they spent a lot of money on developing it, and yet some of the ideas behind it are obviously coming from people who are not thinking about reinventing a medium. They're thinking about sort of duplicating the newspaper medium on the iPad, and it's disappointing. I mean, and the hyperlinking and sharing things socially, that's at the top of the list. I mean, why not? It could even be money to be made there if they added, wire service versions of the long stories and posted them on their website, and then they could sell ads on the website. There are lots of ways they could do it, but they chose not to, and it's disappointing.
Yeah, it's interesting you bring that up, because it got me sort of thinking about the differences between the way I read news online versus the way I read news in the form of ebooks. I actually kind of like the idea of having this pre-produced package of content containing stories that I wouldn't have found on my own, that I might covering topics I might not necessarily have been interested in if I were just wandering the web on my own. So I like the idea of having delivered to my iPad a big chunk of news, politics, sports, all kinds of information as one container. Chris, we haven't heard from you yet. Have you tried the Daily yet?
I have tried the Daily, and like Jason and Tanya, I have my disappointments with it. I think it's a reasonable first effort from a technological viewpoint. It's slow. The experience of using the thing is kind of a pain. It takes a long time to launch and get the news on the application. I'm not thrilled with the content. As Jason said, it's very much USA Today, and I think that's too bad. It certainly fits in the News Corp's model, but I do think that there's a weird split there, that the people most inclined to use this would be technically savvy because they have iPads. And so I think you're looking at a more sophisticated audience, and yet the content is really targeted not at a sophisticated audience, but really people who want kind of cheesy headlines and very shallow stories. They have the opportunity to bring this up, but I'm not sure that they want to do that. I think they're looking out into the future, and that this is really, they're hoping that the audience comes to them rather than trying to modify their content to fit a particular audience. I think where this really is significant is the fact that somebody has brought some sanity to subscriptions, and I think it needed a company like News Corp to do that, to be able to go to Apple and say, we're big, and we're big like you're big, and we need to offer subscriptions. And that's somebody that Apple can listen to. So I think it shows the way that news can be done. And my hope is that now that we have sort of this model that Apple's willing to listen to, and a subscription model we can listen to, that other than publications will come into the market who can offer the kind of depth that I'd want from a news source rather than this shallow USA Today kind of thing.
Yeah, as a publisher, I'm really excited about the whole approach to subscriptions. And you're right, Chris, it did take somebody who's a heavyweight, I think, to negotiate that with Apple. Although I think that was Apple's idea too, is that if they could get it right with a high profile launch like the Daily, that would help them fine tune it. And since there aren't people inside Apple who are totally tuned into the publishing industry, they were able to work with News Corp, who, you know, say what you will about Rupert Murdoch. I think Rupert Murdoch's number one goal is to make money. And I think that's Apple's number one goal, too, because it's a publicly held company. So I think they had that in common, and they were able to work on how to get the business to make sense so that you could do these recurring charges, which is it's going to be a new thing. And I think a lot of people are going to be excited. As a comic book fan, I'm excited by the fact that, you know, comic book buying won't have to be a la carte anymore. I can actually put down a recurring monthly payment or even an annual payment. And as a publisher for Macworld, being able to say, we're going to charge you now, and then a year from now, we're going to charge you again, and then a year or every month. I know that the guy who's the chairman of our company, IDG, you know, every time he gets a chance, he says, what you really want is a monthly, you know, you want a monthly this and a monthly that. You want people to have a $2 charge every month instead of a big charge that they have to authorize every year, because quite frankly, people are more likely to do that. So, you know, it makes good business sense. From a technical standpoint, Chris, I'm wondering if you have any thoughts about the app itself and the way they approach the multimedia stuff, because it is interesting that they've got lots of photos. One of the things that I noticed is that they've got this weird kind of hybrid where sometimes when you're holding it in portrait mode and landscape mode, it does different things, and then other times it does the same thing, and I kind of got confused by that.
Yeah, it's not consistent. You're right. When you flip it one way, it does one thing and does something else the other way. I think that they have such a wonderful opportunity here to do some really interesting things with media. And as you say, they've kind of slapped this old newspaper technology onto this app. They certainly have room to grow. This is a V1 issue, and it's only been out, a week now. So I think they have places that they can go with a faster processor. They can do more. And they're trying. Over the last week or so, you've seen them do a little bit better in being able to deliver something instead of waiting for a minute and 40 seconds for content to load. They're doing a little better with the content. They're trying to put in some editorial content that's more interesting. So it's very early days. There's lots more they can do with this, but it would be nice to see a more consistent interface, and I'm sure that's something they're probably working on.
And I think the whole link thing, I mean, that what's their strategy? Because, you know, the Daily can have value with its own content and also highlight other content around the web, because I know that a lot of traditional publishers would say, oh, no, that we can't do that. We want it needs to all be about us. But if the Daily were the place I could go and know that I was not only getting the top news from them, but I was getting links to like all the other interesting stuff that was out there, if I wanted to read more, they sort of curated that. That would make the Daily more valuable to me. So I don't see why it needs to be an either or kind of approach. Tanya, what do you think?
I think you're right. And I thought about what you had said too about how the Daily is not targeting people like us who are very tech savvy and already read a lot of information on the internet, that it might be targeting maybe an older person or someone who is not as comfortable reading on the internet. They, you know, get an iPad and immediately wonder about reading their newspaper on the iPad. And I'm not sure that I agree with that, just because most of the people I know who are older than me and who are uncomfortable with computers and who might get an iPad because it would be kind of a simpler, lighter weight thing for them to use that they would enjoy, they really do already get their news off the web. And I think that subjecting them to an app with its own interface quirks for how you navigate and how you get around, that is really very unlike using a traditional newspaper or magazine, is not going to be so good. And it would actually be better for those people to be using something that functions a lot like a website, because they at least know the common conventions of using a website. So I'm sort of concerned about the Daily for kind of online digital newbies, just because the interface is a little wacky. And of course, they can improve the interface and change it. But I think that I would be surprised if someone who wasn't already adept on a computer was given an iPad and the Daily and sat down and told to you know, read the magazine. I think they would have problems. They would not have an easy time.
You know, it's funny. The Daily actually is sort of like the it's not necessarily the newspaper of the 21st century. It's more like the manifestation of the dream of the future newspaper from the perspective of like the 50s. Like when the anchor pops up and says, I'm going to tell you what's happening. Press here to view. I feel like I'm watching a fantasy of the news right. from the past brought into the present.
The New York World's Fair version of in the future, mm-hmm. newspapers shall be assembled on a daily basis exactly. at the speed of light. Yes. Well, I'm sorry for that little break. It was sponsored by a large company and maker of chat software.
my coup to take over as host of MacBook Wheelie has failed. Andy has survived. My poison didn't take.
I was actually playing with my RC racer over there, and I got too many tweets saying, "We'll come back, Jason, saying awful things about Canadians." And I wasn't listening, so I don't even want to know what you were saying. But, you know, those things are noted. And the Canadians are armed.
Well, it's a boot. It's a boot time.
They're lovely people, but they are armed. So, okay. Well, I guess this is a good time as any to go to a commercial because this is a good time for said chat software to screw up yet again. So we'll be back after this message from Hover.
Thanks, Andy. This episode is brought to you by Hover.com. Now, Hover is all about making domain registration and service simple because. I don't know. I've registered probably 80 URLs in the last 10 years. So this is something that is near and dear to my heart. And I've done it through, I'm not going to name them, but they're all ugly. I mean, it's not, none of it has been good, you know? And so I'm really happy to be moving to hover.com because it's just, I finally found one that there's not a gauntlet. So, you know, like in many of them that will remain nameless again, is that you sign up for your URL and then you can't find the continue because it's like, and would you like to add this? And would you like to have some flowers? And then we actually have some car detailing that you could have. And do you want to rent a car in Sarasota, Florida? And so there's all this stuff that gets all built in. And then somewhere down really, really, really small is continue. And you just want to go continue. Well, you don't have to do any of that with Hover.com. Hover gets rid of all of that stuff. It doesn't sell you one service after another. They just handle your registration. They just handle your service. They also have a no hold policy. I don't know how many times you've had this issue where there's something wrong with your URL or you can't figure out why it's not working and you get on the call and now it's going to be the estimated time wait time is going to be 15 minutes, you know, and then you put it on hold and then it you know, you're on an iPhone on AT&T and you lose the connection and you start over again. So anyway, not that that's ever happened to me and not that I'm bitter about it. So you won't have to worry about that with Hover.com. They have from 9 a.m. to 8 p.m. Eastern, they have on Monday through Friday, they have a no hold policy. So you're going to not be on hold. You're going to get straight to someone who actually has blood coursing through them and they're actually going to talk to you and they're going to, you know, it's just awesome. So definitely check it out. Hover makes managing domains easy. You can hover. The transfers are free, so they don't charge an extra $10 to extend a domain registration. The who is privacy is free. I don't want everyone who wanders by my URL to know, you know, what my address is and what my phone number is, and that all gets, you know, privatized. I used to pay for that extra every single time. I was like, yeah, I don't want anyone to know that. And Hover does that for free. So if you need a new domain, definitely check it out. Use the offer code MacBreak and you're going to get 10% off, which is awesome. It's MacBreak.hover.com. That's MacBreak.hover.com to get it out. And again, remember, they're only $15 now through February 12th. And if you use MacBreak, you're going to get 10% off of that. So again, check it out. MacBreak.hover.com. Okay, Andy, take it away.
Okay, sorry about that. I was silently again, so I unplugged and replugged, Ooh. And that's when I got to enjoy the bouncing love of the spinning beach ball of death from Skype.
Okay, okay.
Yes. For those of you who are watching live and wondered why I just wouldn't shut up, it's because we lost Andy for a while. We lost Tanya for a while.
You're the host, and I'm going, wow, Jason's
at one point. I was going to have to start.
All right, it's Skype. All right, I said it. It's Skype.
I'm going to have to start monologuing at some point here, and just the Verizon ramble would just continue and continue.
It was like an Agatha Christie. Suddenly, there was only one host left, and then we all think it was you who was knocking off all the Texans, but it was actually the producer.
And then you'd cut back to me, and there'd be an empty chair. and the sound of crickets.
Okay, moving on. I need a beverage. If you need to clear your throat. If you need to do this to your ear.
There, no. We're clearing.
Hey, everybody who's watching live, I'm going to go to the bathroom, and then I'll be back. So I abdicate all responsibility to back to
it's
Andy.
Not your chair, for heaven's sake. You're leaving here. See, the rest of us are professionals. We're wearing astronaut diapers. Well, let's get another sponsorship. You know what? Skype comes in, Skype comes down. Sometimes Wi-Fi drops bandwidth, but you know what always works? The crisp, zero-calorie, refreshing taste of Diet Dr. Pepper. Ah, I'm on the go and ready to show in no time. Thank you, Dr. Pepper.
Oh, dear.
So, are we actually looking at a version of like the fox chicken and bag of grain problem? Where now, remember that we can have Andy, who's the host, but sometimes Skype won't work. We can have Tanya, who's a guest and will always be smart, but sometimes her connection will drop out. We have Chris, who has the best backdrop, but he's not on Verizon yet.
Mm.
So right now we're at the part where it's Chris, Tanya, and me in the boat. We've left Jason on the shore. So right now he's...
Oh, there you go.
There he is.
Always wash your hands, everybody.
Looking refreshed.
Yes, I feel good.
Thanks for sharing, Jason.
It's just us, right? There's no internet watching us or anything, right?
I hope you tipped the attendant. $2 is customary for handing you that clean towel.
And there is a webcam in the Twit Cottage bathroom, right, I assume?
Exactly.
So everywhere. Nice. And microphones.
For paid subscribers only. After 11 p.m., when Cinemax lets you down, the folks at Twit are there to take care of you.
We call it the Diamond Club.
The Double Diamond. Okay.
All Alex right. Does a clean throw to you, Alex, Andy, so take it back.
Thank you very much. Next, there are a bunch of news on the Android front, given that it is the bizarro iPad to our Truth, Justice, and the American Way iPad. It is a subject of interest to most of us. Google had an event last week in which they showed off the latest status of Honeycomb Android 3.0 OS. That's the first version of the OS that is actually suited and targeted towards tablets. Most of the demo wasn't about the user interface. Most of it was just about ways of getting apps on it, services that were going to be available to developers as they're writing their apps for it. We also had a sneak peek at Motorola's Zoom tablet, which most people, including myself, is sort of marking as the big box, the big electronics manufacturer leader as terms of answer to the iPad. Is certainly the hardware that is most similar to what the iPad is out to accomplish. Now, Engadget had a picture of a rumor based on a Best Buy house ad claiming that the price of the Zoom was going to be $800, which was bad news number one, if it's true. Bad news number two being that although it does have Wi-Fi, if you want to, you will not be able to turn on Wi-Fi unless you buy a 3G contract and then cancel it after a month, which means that you will also, not only will you have to pay for the 3G service you don't want, but also a Verizon activation fee, thus adding about $50 or $60 to the $800 price of their 32 gigabyte 3G tablet. I'm not sure how to react to this. Obviously, you see I'm laughing, so that's my gut instinct is to laugh at this. But actually, Honeycomb doesn't look all that bad. It has one feature that I actually quite like. It does carry over the widget concepts that you get on Android phones, with the added attraction that the Mail app, for instance, has a widget that you can put on the desktop. So you can have your Twitter widget, you can have a Mail widget, you can have an Angry Birds widget, a Farmville widget. When you flip on the tablet, you can notice that, there's something really interesting in Mail. You tap on the widget, and the widget automatically launches into the full screen version of the Honeycomb version of the app. Now, the good news would be that this gives you a really cool way to multitask. Is also really good app switching features on it. The bad news is that it seems as though they might be, in practice, maybe Google is missing the thread here, that there should be a difference, underscore the word difference, between a tablet operating system and a desktop operating system. It really looks like all this is missing is a mouse and a really expensive consultant service contract to turn it into Windows 7. Chris, you're the iOS person that I always look to for insight and sanity. Have you seen the Zoom? Have you seen Honeycomb? And what do you think about these things? If the answers to both of these things are no, make something up because you look damn good.
I'm happy to do that. I think Honeycomb is probably the worst cereal ever made by General Mills. And I'm glad to see that it's been brought back in a new version 3 form. I don't get it. Honestly, the price of this device, I understand that if you get the full-on expensive iPad, you're getting close to that price. You can easily spend over $700 on this thing. I think trying to move into this market at that price point makes zero sense. Why only offer one model if indeed that's what they're going to do? It makes much more sense to find at least the bargain basement model that's going to come close to the entry level for the iPad so that people can compare something directly rather than looking at this. The price of the 3G makes no sense. Honeycomb looks interesting, but you know, honestly, I have to wonder how many people are going to care, because when I look at these comparisons, I look at the iPad, it's been out for a year, and I can't help but think about the iPod. And come back when, you know, there was a new WYSI model and said, yes, this does more than the iPod and it costs maybe less or maybe the same. And nobody cared. It was because everybody wanted an iPod. That's just what you wanted. And I think that a lot of geeks look at these devices and say, well, yes, it has a better processor and it has better capabilities. It's more flexible in this way and more flexible in that way. But ultimately, when it comes down to the target audience, which is not me or you, but just regular folks, they look at this thing and say, well, but my friend has an iPad, so why wouldn't I have an iPad? And it looks really cool, and I've used their iPad, or I already have an iPad, so why switch brands? And I don't know. Maybe it's possible that this will be a different story this time, and it won't be a repeat of the iPod. But I do think that Apple has done it so right with the iPad, and as they did with the iPod too, it was so right that people had to come out and try to find some device that would differentiate it in some way, and it came out as either not as good or an imitation that didn't compel them to move for any particular reason. Is the reason flash? And I don't think so.
Yeah. So it's weird that the best feature of the iPad seems to, despite all the great things about iOS, is $499 and no contract commitments of any kind after that.
Yep.
If you can't have an answer to that, you really have to come up with a really compelling reason why not. And I don't know if an SD card slot is really the answer to that. The other interesting thing from we're all sports jocks, sports nuts, sports fans, sports tyros, or fantasy league Scottish shinty league is just.
We almost got busted
because so much money has been changing hands. But I think most of us are definitely in. We're not just past the watch the Super Bowl just for the ads portion. We're in the wait till tomorrow morning and watch the ads when they're posted online portion. Motorola did go for a Super Bowl ad with the Zoom that was clearly influenced by the 1984 ad. Only instead of the sackcloth and dusty minions shuffling through the dystopian future, we had basically iPod, what other people would call D-bags. We have it loaded up here, and we have people in hoodies, actually very clean, sanitary. They're very nicely put
together.
There's
that subtle jab there, the 1984. Exactly.
Yeah, and they're all wearing iPod earbuds, and we have a guy who, for all of his think different, he's still wearing a very boring gray suit. I don't know if that's a good touch there. I'm just not sure what, and again, they don't seem unhappy. They're just simply saying that the message of this seems to be different just for the case of being different. We're not going to tell you that there's anything new or different about this.
I'm just wondering how much they paid David Pogue to be in this commercial.
How many people are going to watch this ad and think it's for the iPad? That's what I mean, that was my joke on Twitter that half the people didn't get, which is people are going to watch this ad and go, ooh, that's a cool iPad.
Yeah. See, the weird thing for me, look at the scene right here where he sends the electronic bouquet to the other person and the lovely looking lady in the other cubicle. But she also seems to have a Zoom because that's the device she gets this message on. So they're saying that only dudes can appreciate the awesomeness of the Zoom. Is that it?
Yeah, it's the number of things that's wrong with this ad is kind of mind blowing. it's so wrong on so many different levels.
Well, we have to look for the positives. It is well exposed. Most of the shots are in focus.
nice color.
The audio is good. Exactly. So I'm sure that the TV safe area, everything was supposed to be visible to both SD and HD TV worked well. So it's not like we're just throwing shade on them. That we're confused. That's all.
Rule one of a commercial, I think, is don't insult. I mean, there's only one tablet right now, 15 million iPads out there. And what this ad does first and foremost is say, hey, everybody who bought an iPad is a drone. It's like, don't you want to try to reach those people and sell your product to them? Sorry, Tanya.
Tanya.
Oh, that's all right. But I'm going to take a contrarian point of view, just so we can have a contrarian point of view.
We're getting some Cylon-ing on your channel there. I wonder if you could quit Skype and restart in 8 minutes before we move on to another topic. The technical issue. We're sorry.
I'm as mad about this as you.
Sorry.
So my contrarian point of view is just that there's things we love about the iPad and Apple, and there's things that I think arguably some people don't love about the iPad and Apple. And Apple needs Android. It needs the Zoom or other devices to be good enough that they keep Apple on their toes, and also that they give people choices who, for whatever reason, philosophical, flexible, whatever their problem, if they don't want to use Apple products, it's great if they have a reasonable alternative. And we all want Apple to have competition so that Apple is pushed to respond to the kinds of things that consumers want them to do.
Absolutely.
And to continue to make great hardware. And so I thought that the ad itself was quite odd, and it's quite funny that Apple is now being laughed at in an ad for, creating drone-like people, and some other device is claiming to be for, romantic, artistic, creative people. That's really quite silly. But my other sort of main criticism or critique of the ad, which just goes with a gripe I've got generally about the world, is they never said how to pronounce the thing. X-O-O-M.
Right. Exhume, yeah. Like exhume the body.
Yeah.
Dr. Quincy and the cast of CSI are big fans of the Motorola Exhume.
Yeah,
I think that Apple, with their lock on the App Store and the way they're progressing with the Mac App Store and with their very single-minded sort of take on what people should be doing with computing these days, that it's just really vital for them to have robust competition. And
absolutely.
I'm glad that Google's trying to do this, even if their first couple attempts are maybe more expensive or more weird than would be ideal. They need to learn how to do this so they can compete with Apple.
I agree. I just wish that some of those points had been made in the ad. Amazon had a really good ad for the Kindle, in which all they had to do was say, here is the woman lounging in the bright sun by poolside, reading a book on her $139 Kindle. There is the guy sitting next to her on his iPad, in which all he sees is his own reflection, and it cost $500. Those are the two killer points they made. Also, the point they made, the subtle point that there is a beautiful woman next to you, and you want to talk to her about her ebook reader? Really, sir? That man don't got game, if that's the terminology that's appropriate for that venue. So we do need competition. I'm more looking for the competition from companies like Notion Inc., who seems to have built like the anti iPad tablet, where it's the iPad costs $750 in its most expensive configuration. The Atom costs $200 less. It's readable in bright light. It's got more ports than any sane person or even one sensible Android developer would know what to do with. I don't know how well it's going to work, but it really seems like they're coming at it the right way.
What kind of crazy mixed up world do we live in where Apple is the company that's got the product that is the price leader, and that everybody else is desperately trying to get their product to be priced down competitive with Apple's. I guess it says something about Apple buying up so much flash memory, and now they're buying up a lot of display technology that Apple, the rumor has it that when the iPad was in development, the number one feature was $499. That was the number one thing to target. And mm-hmm. even now, the Zoom looks great, and I totally agree that we need good competition, and Gingerbread looks interesting, or Honeycomb, sorry. It's candy. It's Google. Whatever. Honeycomb looks good, but man, if the iPad's got a year lead and these promising competitors can't get close to it on price, how crazy is that? That Apple is that far ahead? It baffles even me that we'd live in a world where Apple would be like 30%, 40%, 50% better on price than its competition. That's crazy.
Well, I had sort of a scary amount of insight the other day when I was watching TV on my Verizon Fios DVR, and I used to have a TiVo, and I liked my TiVo, and I could give you a long list of why it was technically superior, easier to use, more features, more sensible than any cable company provided DVR. And then I moved, and it was a technical problem getting it to work properly on my new cable provider. I said, okay, I'll use the Verizon DVR just as a stopgap. And you know what? It wasn't great, but it was okay. And since I'm not an enthusiast about DVRs, it served the purpose. And here's the big point that really came to me the other day. It gave me enough time with it that I stuck with it long enough for the technology to sort of keep up, because now I've got an iPad app that lets me control everything on the DVR, including deleting and rescheduling stuff. I like the fact that I can get data from it from any room in the house or any place on the internet. I'm worried that this is the sort of thing that I'm interested to see if this sort of thing happens with iOS devices too. If people just get those cheap Android phones long enough for Android 4.0 to get so good at doing what the iOS does that, and maybe 6.1 half dozen the other, Apple could be in real trouble if they don't try to keep up. Chris, I mean, you've been following iOS stuff. Like, do you see any of this happening? Well, is Apple getting bored? I guess if I want to put it into one question, is Apple getting bored with iOS? Are they ceasing to challenge themselves?
No, I think they continue to challenge themselves. I think that they will do that from within. I don't know that they need a lot of competition from outside. I think they're the kind of company that wants to do better every single time. They don't want to rest on their
Chris,
laurels.
Chris, are you like on a construction site or something?
Yeah, you know, somehow, whenever I'm on Mac Break, it's when they have the leaf blower guy here. So leaf blower guy's out here.
He comes every Tuesday, obviously.
I think when he tunes in on this on the live stream, he says, oh, good. And he dashes over here and he turns his leaf blower on outside my office. So, yeah.
I guess he disagrees with what we're saying, and he doesn't have the ability to cut in on our phone call and disconnect our internet connection.
If he could be inside here, he would be the guy going, nah, 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 nah. But instead, he's got a leaf blower. So he works with the tools he has. He does fabulous work, by the way. If you're in this area, you should hire him. He's great. Except for this. I was talking about something. Does Apple need... yes, I mean, everybody needs some competition. But again, Apple is going to push itself. They've got this huge leap on everybody else, and I think that they're not content to just sit and wait to see what happens. Plus, again, as I've mentioned many times, they have a big whiteboard somewhere, you know, locked away 17 layers down underground, where they've got this all planned out for years and years and years to come. So I think that they look at what the competition is doing, and they look at their watch and say, yeah, they're 18 months behind, but 6 months from now, we'll be 3 years ahead. We're doing fine. Keep working, and we get the next thing.
Well, we're going to get ready to go to our picks of the week. But before then, I want to do a lightning round of topics. These are a list of things that I've sort of bookmarked here that are interesting enough for us to have quick comments on, maybe not long enough for us to. Well, actually, I was going to say not involved enough for us to talk about for 15 or 20 minutes. But given cutouts and technical problems, who knows? We are still using our unidentified co-conspirator Skype. I'm fixing them with the steely glaze. I'm hoping they're feeling very, very guilty about what they've done right now. First of all, let's start with practical stuff. We haven't really talked about Mac stuff in Mac Break Weekly yet today. MacBooks. It looks like they're definitely overdue for a refresh. We would have seen a refresh in this about 2 or 3 months from now, months ago. And now we're on day 300 and something, and we haven't seen a new one. Is this a good time to wait? If you need to get a MacBook soon, should you hold off? And what are we expecting for the coming year? Let's start off with Jason.
Well, yeah, you got to wait. I think that the rumors are probably true that there's something coming, although this whole Intel thing where they have the bad chip and the Sandy Bridge chipset that may actually be part of the next MacBooks might mean that that Apple's plans have to be delayed too. As for this year, I think the big thing is going to be more MacBook Air-like features in the other Mac line. I wouldn't be surprised if we saw essentially a 15-inch Air. It wouldn't surprise me if the 13-inch Pro disappeared, maybe even the $999 MacBook. But I think we're going to see that... approach of no optical drive and flash storage and just super light and thin pushing into the rest of Apple's line. I don't think it's going to totally eradicate it yet, but I think Apple's going to start pushing them that way this year.
Tanya.
I agree with Jason. I think if you really want a MacBook right now, you should wait. In fact, I think if you want pretty much any Mac laptop, you probably should wait unless you really, really want one right now. And of course, if you really want one right now, you have to look at the MacBook Airs because they're just pretty awesome, pretty reasonable price point. And it might be that if you thought about why you want a laptop really carefully, maybe if you sort of modernized your thinking, the MacBook Air would be just what you want anyway. Maybe not, but it seems like there's just so much speculation and possibilities with what the monitor sizes could be, what the processor could be, what the hard drives, whether it will have a DVD drive. It seems like a very excellent time to wait 6 weeks and see if there's more information to work from. That's definitely, and traditionally you always say, well, just buy the Mac if you want it right now. If you know you want it right now, just buy it. Otherwise, wait. But it even feels like if you know you want it right now, unless you want one of the new MacBook Airs, maybe you should wait.
Chris.
Yep. I agree too. It's wait time. Somebody actually called me about this a week ago and said, I think we're at the crossroads now where we're going to see more MacBook Air-like things brought to the standard MacBooks. I carried around a 15-inch MacBook Pro last week, and I envied all my friends who were carrying around their MacBook Airs because my shoulder really hurt. It's time. It's coming up. But this friend said, I really need it now. I have to have it. I need to get my work done. Fine. Well, do what you want. And they looked at the Air and found that it wasn't big enough because they do a lot of spreadsheet stuff. So it wasn't a big enough monitor for them.
I don't think the Airs are going to get any big changes soon. It just came out in the fall. I think if you're looking for a MacBook Pro, you should wait. I think if you're looking for a MacBook Air, quite frankly, I love mine. I think you should just run out and get an 11-inch MacBook Air right now. Just right this moment. Go now. Okay, wait till the show is over and then go.
I will use my Molofen group voice. Correct! You should wait before buying a MacBook. Issue number two. Will Apple start to phase out boxed software in their retail stores? There was a bit on MacRumors.com that sort of made the case for this very well, but it's kind of a natural evolution, you might think, because Apple's having such success in moving people onto the App Store instead of boxed software. It seems like they would want to take that retail space back from the Apple stores and put them into things that actually make them more than $1.50 per package. Once again, let's start off with you, Jason Snell.
Yeah, the existence of the Mac App Store means that, Apple's got the whole Apple retail store thing wired down to every dollar for every square foot of shelf space that they've got in those stores. And they've got to think that most of that stuff is going to be available on the Mac App Store and they're not going to worry about it. I think there will still be some box software there, things that aren't available, like some of the security software can't be in the Mac App Store. Microsoft Office isn't in the Mac App Store. So I think some of it will remain, but it's going to keep on shrinking and wouldn't surprise me if at some point it vanishes. Sort of like books and magazines, they've all sort of faded away from the Apple retail as well, because Apple, they make a lot of money. They know very well what the best way is to make money in those stores. And if the box software isn't I think right now it isn't a big moneymaker. It's sort of there to induce people into coming back. And with the Mac App Store, it's not going to be necessary.
Tanya.
I agree. And I think Apple will be moving to get rid of the software, as Jason said, but not just to improve their bottom line in the Apple stores, but because, frankly, for the typical consumer, the experience of getting your software from the Mac App Store is pretty good. And the experience of the updating is just so much better than the hodgepodge of updating we've got now, with each application having its own updater and its own technique for informing you about updates. And I think it's going to really streamline the whole experience for a lot of people. So Apple, given the way they really think about the whole thing, I don't think they want people buying software in boxes anymore, just so that they're sort of dictating or curating the experience for their customers and saying, no, you'll like it better if you get it from the Mac App Store.
Chris.
In the short term, I think they're going to get rid of third-party software. I think they'll keep their own software on the shelves. I might note that when you now purchase a MacBook Pro one and choose the add-on option, you can purchase Aperture for $199. I expect if you go into an Apple retail store and you look on the shelf and look at a copy of Aperture, it is $199. If you go to the Mac App Store, what, it's $80 now? So, you know, there's this opportunity when you have a new Mac user in there and saying, oh, by the way, you know, if you're really serious about photography, you're going to want a copy of Aperture. And they'll say, well, of course I do. And there's an extra $200 on your bill.
I slightly disagree. I think that there will always be some presence of box software, chiefly because they have to make sure that when they get the people who are not that familiar with computers, who like the idea of actually getting a physical product when they're spending $40 or $50 or $60. Although I agree with the consensus of the panel that this is a wonderful plan, one wonderful part in Apple's ongoing plan to trick consumers into giving them money and getting nothing in return. A wonderful strategy that started with iTunes that said, yes, you own this software, unless we decide to change the DRM, you want to switch to something else, and you own this one. So if there's a way that they can just give, if consumers could just give Apple $200, and instead of getting an iPod, they simply get permission to, whenever they're at a bank or a grocery store, listen to whatever music happens to be playing, I think this is sort of the natural evolution of that plan. Issue number three, the Catholic Church has approved, this is true, an iPhone app that aids the penitent in the confessional. According to the description, it walks the penitent, the prisoner, through the process of the offertory of confession. It has actually been approved by a clergy in the Midwest. A bishop and a priest walked into a bar and approved this app. features for version 2 are rumored to be the ability to tap into Foursquare and see who's, if you're the king of sinning in your parish. Also, you can see, tap a button and tweet your penance, and also find out who is sinning within your region if you've turned on location awareness. Let's just get some reactions to this. Once again, let's start with Jason.
Must not say anything sacrilegious. Must not say anything sacrilegious.
And so,
must not say anything. I hope the Pope is approved.
The Pope actually, he did a very Steve Jobsian response, saying that in general he would like to see greater expansion into social media networks, and that the Catholic Church does need to change with the times. Obviously, Vatican II in 1963, we're ready for a third sequel. I think it looks like it's more like, you know, The Godfather, where they had Godfather 2 and then about a 20-year layoff and then Godfather 3. The Vatican II Council was in the 60s. We're probably due for 3.0. A lot of people are probably itching to get those new features. Tanya?
Oh, I have a question for the Pope.
I can speak for His Holiness. Go ahead.
My question is, if I'm a good Catholic and I use my iPhone to do my confessions and I go to heaven, will I get to take my iPhone with me?
Yes, but you may need to repurchase and re-download all of your content. Chris.
Yeah, I could see that.
There's no CDMA coverage in heaven, by the way. It's only GSM. Yeah.
It's just as the Lethal Ruthians, as it is on earth, so it is in heaven, unfortunately. Chris.
I think this is a rich opportunity, third-party opportunity for the Catholic Church.
Excellent.
For in-app purchases.
Indulgences.
Exactly, indulgences. So, you know, depending on you'll have a menu of sins and, you know, priced accordingly and say, well, let's see, I lied and that's like a 99-cent sin. And, you know, like, oh, good, I'm forgiven for that. And this is a really big one, you know, and that's a $49 sin. And so, you know, or the $69 sin is the really bad one. And so you just tap the button and you're forgiven. And I think that is a wonderful way. Plus, it helps out the Catholic Church.
Now, do you think that will help to undervalue sins? Because a lot of people are doing the sort of sins that they feel are worth $50, $100, $200. They feel that the constraints of an app store model for indulgences means that they have, no matter what it is, murder, coveting a wife, slaughtering an ox on the wrong day of the week, they're going to have to price it out at $299, and there's really no way to make a profit on that.
It does drive sins down to the basement. I mean, you've really got kind of the lowest common denominator of sins. So I think much like the Mac App Store, they have to keep the value of sinning at a reasonable price so that people aren't just sinning just for the heck of it, just so that they can push the button on their iOS device.
Well, my pronouncement on this is that I do think that's a good thing, because if we put more iPhones in the confessional, there's an increased chance that your priest will be and confessor will be playing Angry Birds, will not really be paying attention, and will let you off light in your sentence there. Okay, now item number four, an iPad 2 was recently spotted at the media event for the Daily that last week, leading to more substantive rumors of what is actually out there. Someone saw somebody with an iPad that had a camera on it. So this is a good opportunity to sort of go among the panel here and find out, what are you personally doing to screw with people's minds to make them think that you've been seated with new iPad and iPhone hardware, and that it does something that it really absolutely positively will never do? Once again, we're going to start with Jason.
Well, it's really easy for me, because I had that Verizon iPhone review that got posted a few days before anybody, you know, any regular person had one, because I got one from Apple, one of the few to get one. And at this point, that means that I'm a marked man. Everybody assumes that iPhone I've got, that iPad I have in that case, you really just have to cover it up. And they're like, oh, can I see in your case there to see what that camera on the iPad is? And then, yeah, I suppose I could make like a little scrape or something and make it seem a little bit more. But I'm under suspicion as it is. And of course, if I did have an iPad 2, I couldn't tell you. You see what I did there?
Good answer. That's what I usually do too. Tanya, how are you screwing with people's minds about your knowledge of future Apple events?
Oh, I always just tell them, you know, that I know all kinds of things, but, you know, I would have to kill you if I told you, you know, how do you think I've been in this business for the last 20 years? But to more actively screw with their minds, I think I would use duct tape. I would take the oldest iPad in my house, there's two, and I would strategically put bits of duct tape on it to sort of cover up possible camera lenses and things. Not much to do it.
Oh, cheap and effective. I like that one. Mm. Although you are missing a trick here, not only just for screwing with people, but also to promote the Take Control series. If you were to put on the eStore, Take Control of new Apple iPad 3 hoverboard, and then simply remove it in about 10 hours, but make sure that it was up there long enough to be in Google's cache, you could really get a lot of people not buying the iPad 2, wait for the price to drive down to $299, buy them at a loss, and then resell them at a good profit. Chris,
whenever I take a picture with my iPhone 4 and I email it to somebody, I make sure that I change my signature to read "sent from my iPad," and that immediately gets people say, "Well, how did you do that?" And then I have to apologize and say, "I'm sorry, I can't tell you."
My usual manner is to hold my hand up flat and tap into the air, commenting about how this new magical iPad is fair and goodly cut, made of some such seemly golden threads, such as only the finest of eyes can even detect it. And it seemed to work a lot during Macworld. I got a lot of people paying for my bar tabs once I let them hold it once or twice. And they agreed that, once again, the lines were pleasing, the interface was goodly cut. And it would certainly be a wonderful addition. Last item. There was a video interview with Elton John and his husband and his new child, saying that he's looking forward to taking pictures of his new baby on his new iPad 2. How do we all feel about this, Jason?
I'm gonna pass on that and instead point out that somebody in the chat room has just suggested that your priest will probably be playing Angry God on his iPhone, not Angry Birds.
So. Or pay attention, for God's sakes, we're here to look at the chat room.
And as for Elton John, pass.
Pass. Tanya.
Well, either he's, you know, screwing with us because he wants us to think he already has the iPad 2, or, you know, I just think it's kind of nice that he can take pictures of his baby.
Excellent. Chris?
Dearly, as I love Elton and his music, I think he's old and confused, and he doesn't know what an iPad is. I think he's talking about his iPhone and thought, oh, this thing you mean? Yes, Elton. He has a lot of people around him who say, yes, Elton, every day. So I look forward to seeing the pictures he's taken with his iPhone 3G.
Well, I actually think this is a great piece of news. It also, despite what Gruber has said about not believing in a higher resolution iPad 2 display, I think this does demonstrate that we're going to have a much higher resolution, perhaps even HD resolution display, because as we know, it would be that much more difficult for Elton John to even see a standard iPad 2 through those glasses with all the pink tinting and the glitter and the feathers around it. So a higher resolution display, I think, is definitely indicated now. I'm definitely 100% behind that rumor. He did compose Rocket Man And really, that's all we know. Am I involved in the space industry? No, I'm not. Elton John is. I think that he wins. That's the reason why we say he's no rocket scientist. Okay, well, we're going to go to our picks of the week, but not before this last message from our friends at GoToMeeting. Take it away, Alex.
Thanks, Andy. MacBreak is brought to you by GoToMeeting.com. Now, I don't know how many meetings you're in. I'm in a lot of meetings, and a lot of them are actually on GoToMeeting. We actually do a ton of our training within the Pixel Corps on GoToMeeting. It is, you know, we have people all over the world, and really the reality is that we have people, you know, all over the world that we work with these days. We have friends, we have colleagues, we have clients that are everywhere, spread out all over the United States, all over the world. And to be honest with you, from here to San Francisco, which is something that I rarely like to do. So, you know, I don't want to deal with the traffic. I don't want to deal with the gas. I don't want to deal with any of that stuff. Parking. I just want to talk to people. But the problem is that over the phone, it's not quite enough. You don't want to, you know, that's not, you can't communicate. You can't show what's on your screen. You can't have those pieces. And that's what GoToMeeting starts to brings all of that back together. It allows everyone to see your screen. You can have people take over your screen so you can show them stuff. They can show you things. You can have a conversation back and forth. All the things you were going to do in a conference room, except you're not in a conference room. You're, you know, in a really nice shirt and some boxer shorts sitting at your desk. You know, that, you know, it's really quite nice. Not that I've ever done that for those of you in the Pixel Corps who have been in meetings with me. So so you definitely want to check it out. If you're going to be working with someone that is not in your office, not within like three blocks of you, you know, GoToMeeting is the thing you need. You can really keep those relationships close. Make sure that you're really communicating what needs to be communicated rather than what you thought you said over the phone. GoToMeeting is great for collaborative sessions, product reviews and demos. You want to show people what you have. Sales presentations, training sessions. That's what we use it for in the Pixel Corps primarily. And just about any type of meeting where you need to actually see stuff, you need to bring a bunch of people together, you need to have that discussion. The voice over IP is all built in, so you don't need everyone on a phone and then looking at the screen. You know, all of that stuff's built in. It's great. You set up all of the invites, you send it out, and then they just get a little app. They get a little URL. They just click on it, it pops open, takes over, and they're able to. You're able to just have this meeting. They don't have to be technologically savvy to really make this work. They just have to have a computer. So it's really, really, really easy to use. GoToMeeting is brought to you, of course, by Citrix. And it is the favorite because really it is the easiest to use and the most affordable. So if you don't believe me, you can just go ahead and try it yourself. You can get 30 days for free. You can call your friends, call your colleagues, call whoever you want to call. You know, try set up a couple meetings and see if this really works for you. It's free for 30 days and it's a low flat rate, really low. If you want to do it after that, you can have as many meetings as you want for that flat rate. The you know, remember the phone and IP is all built in, so you don't need to, you're not going to pay extra for that. So make sure to go to gotomeeting.com/MacBreak, and you'll be able to, you know, actually, you know, try it out, sign up, and see if this really works for you. Okay, Andy, back to you.
And we're back with our picks of the week. Things that are on iOS, macOS, or just in general life that either we're fond of, we want to recommend, or just would like to write off against our taxes because we mentioned it on the show. So I'm going to start with Jason. Given that the two of you have just had it sprung on you that you can tax deduct almost anything that you mention here, if you want to talk about the Chevy Volt, for instance, or 72-inch flat screen TV, by all means, go ahead. But we're going to start off with you, Jason Snell.
That's the Alex Lindsay approach, isn't it? You mentioned things that cost $20,000 and this high-end audio equipment, and then look, magical things happen. No, I try to go for more affordable picks. So I actually, many people who know that I'm a baseball fan and that my childhood team, the San Francisco Giants, won the World Series this year. This is relevant because I want to relive during this cold winter when there's no baseball happening. I want to relive those moments of the playoffs. And unfortunately, this boggles my mind, Major League Baseball hasn't made available the radio broadcast of those games for download. However, I am an MLB audio subscriber, and I used my two picks to record those broadcasts against the express written consent of the commissioner, by the way, and then edit them down. So my first tool was Audio Hijack Pro from Rogue Amoeba, which is $32. And that allowed me to record the internet stream, the Flash player-based stream of the games. And that got me an MP3 file, basically. And then Item number two is Fission, also from Rogue Amoeba, $32. And even if you're not crazy like me, you might want to use Fission for some things. The idea with Fission is it's a lossless audio editor, so you can take any MP3 or AAC file. And normally, if you wanted to edit that down, like to cut out the commercials in the middle of a baseball game, you would need to open it up in an editor, which will expand it into, you know, full size, and then you'd edit it. And then if you wanted to save it back as an MP3, it would have to re-encode it. And you actually lose quality when you re-encode something that had already been encoded. It's like saving a JPEG from a full quality, like TIFF or a RAW file. You save a JPEG, and then you open it again and save it again. It gets messier. And in the case of audio files, they sound worse. So by using Fission, I can take these MP3 files, trim out the commercials, and save them back. And there's no loss in quality, because quite frankly, the quality isn't very good to begin with, and I didn't want it to degrade any further. And it worked. So now, you know, I'm standing at the bus at bus stop at 7:30 in the morning in February, listening to a baseball game. And the best part is when they say, "We'll be back right after this," it's immediately followed by, "And we're back." So Rogue Amoeba, and you can get that at rogueamoeba.com. They're both $32. And if you've ever been in that position of having to edit an MP3 and not wanting to lose the quality, Fission's the one.
Yep, I love Audio Hijack. There's so many BBC radio documentaries that they're up there on the site for exactly 1 week and you can't download them. And because I always send in my TV license fee here from the colonies because I listen to these programs, or radio license fees as well. I feel as though I'm entitled to not only listen to them, but capture them and actually be able to actually listen to them in my car. So yeah, Audio Hijack has been, if there's a pick of the week all-star, Audio Hijack is definitely one of them. Tanya, what's your pick?
Well, my pick concerns email because I am email involved. I spend a lot of time in my email and I'm also very email challenged. I get more email than really I can deal with. So first of all, I should mention that I use Gmail and I've installed on my Macintosh a sort of wrapper app for Gmail called Mailplane. And what Mailplane does is it just brings your Gmail kind of in the Gmail, the usual Gmail interface, but with a couple kind of Mac-ish tweaks, and it puts it in its own application so it's not running on a tab in your web browser window, which I like a lot. But it also is still very much Gmail, so you're not trying to like integrate the way Gmail thinks with the way the Mail application works or something like that. So anyway, I use Mailplane, and Mailplane periodically updates. And 3 or 4 days ago, the update came down the pipe and it said, hey, if you update, one of the new features is that you can install a plugin called Zero Boxer. And I thought, oh, okay, that sounds interesting. And I'll check it out a little more. And it turns out that Zero Boxer, which by the way is my official plugged product, my pick of the week, is a little game that you play in email and you get points by deleting or archiving or sort of dealing with the stuff in your inbox. And the more you deal with, the more points you get. I mean, obviously, there's a lot of ways to cheat the system here, but where it gets kind of fun is that you can play against friends. So I got my husband and co-conspirator here at Tidbits to also install this, and we sort of, you know, friended each other, and now we're competing over, you know, who clears the most messages and who writes the most messages, and then at dinner we can compare our scores. And you can friend anyone who's in your Google contacts, but I kind of didn't want to just friend random people who happen to be in my Google address book. So I need other people who know me to install this plugin and sort of, you know, announce to the world that they want to play, and then I can find them and we can see who is the true email ninja. That is my pick. So far it's being fun and it is helping me to focus more on getting work done in mail instead of just, you know, reading random emails that aren't very work related.
Well, I came up with my own inbox zero solution. It was going into preferences and mail and turning off that feature that puts the number of unread emails badged inside your doc icon. As soon as I stopped seeing that five-digit number, I thought, okay, I'm doing great. Chris, your pick.
Okay, first I want to add something to Jason's pick, and that is that you can get Fission and Audio Hijack Pro together in a bundle for $50, so you save $12 by purchasing them together.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Welcome. This my pick goes along with a story from Macworld Expo last week, and that is that Ben Long and I were doing our iPad session, and we're doing it in front of a live audience, and they give us these devices called Elmos, and essentially these are cameras that are mounted on an arm that show what's ever placed on the thing below it, which might be your iPad. The picture isn't all that great, so I was hoping that I could find a way to actually project all of the interface from an iPad out to the audience, and sure enough, you can if you jailbreak your iPad, and that's what I did. I used a tethered jailbreak called Red Snow to do that. Well, just a couple of days ago, a new jailbreak has come out. It's called Green Poison, and that's Green POIS0N, because you have to do that, and it's free. And you tether your thing to your Mac, you install Green Poison very much like you've installed other jailbreaks in the past. And when you do that, you end up with a little app here. And I'll see if I can show it on my monitor without shiny too much. Anyway, it's this green thing over here called Loader. And once you've got Loader installed, then you can install Cydia, which is an option within Loader. And once you've got Cydia in there, then you can purchase an add-on that's called Display Out. And it's $2. It's available from the Big Boss repository. With that, you can attach a 30-pin to VGA adapter to the iPad, connect it then to your projector, or you can connect it to a monitor or your television if you like. And it looks great. It looks just like the iPad's interface. It's like having Steve Jobs there with his secret iPad and iOS device where he can display the entire interface instead of just little apps that are allowed to do it. It doesn't seem to affect battery performance. It's very responsive. So unlike some of the other TV Out packs they had in the past, this one actually, when you flick on your iPad, you see it happen immediately on the screen. It's quite clear. It also supports composite and component video out, but it doesn't look nearly as good as VGA. So if you are of a mind to jailbreak your iOS device and you need Display Out, and teachers and presenters often do, this is one way to go. If you do that, your Apple warranty is completely shot, so you're breaking the warranty, but it's not illegal. This has been the Librarian of Congress says it's perfectly okay to jailbreak and unlock devices, but once you do that, your warranty is had it. So Green Poison and the Display Out plugin are my picks of the week.
Now, what do you have to do to do anything to resecure your iPad after you're done? Because I know that one of the core components of every jailbreak has to be the ability to SSH remotely into the iPad, and one of the every time I've seen a jailbreak routine, it's always been, oh, and make sure you change the default password, because essentially right. You've just established OpenSSH. Is that all taken care of for you?
No, it's not taken care of for you. But when you install Cydia, there is a link there that says how to change your iOS device password. It runs you through it. You can either do it from terminal on your Mac, or you can actually install the terminal app, which is a jailbreak app, on the device itself, and then change your password there. And you absolutely should. We haven't seen a lot of people jumping into jailbreak on iOS devices for a while, but at one time there was, because nobody changed their password, and now you can do that. And on there, it provides complete instructions as well as what the default password is for these devices.
Awesome. Yeah, you say the frame rate is way up there. The last time I do have a jailbroken iPad for that purpose, it works and puts like 2 or 3 frames per second, so it really is just way up there.
You're probably using the old one, which is TV Out, yeah, which is very slow. The Display Out is quite fast. So, yeah, I think if you still have that device, it's $2. You have to get it through the Cydia store, which requires that you provide them with either a PayPal account or your Amazon ID. Then they can charge it to there. It comes through on your credit card, just as any other Amazon purchase does. Then you link it through either Facebook or Google. So it's not as easy as using the App Store, but it's not as complicated as it sounds. But yeah, absolutely try it with Display Out. I think you'll like it.
Awesome. So one way or another, either you get a really great Display Out hack, or you once again restore your faith in how good an idea the Apple App Store was.
Exactly.
Okay, well, my pick is going to be of great appeal to people, to geeks of a certain age. It's called Cathode, and it is simply a terminal emulator app for the Mac OS. And, well, what do you need? Why do you want to buy a terminal emulator app, a $20 terminal emulator app for? Because you already get a terminal app built into the OS. Well, this one will give you such wonderful, warm, fuzzy American Graffiti style flashback memories of it's 1983, it's 1984, and you're behind an Apple IIe, and you're in the school library, and you got there to class late, and you're using like the crummy old monitor where like the refresh rate is a little bit off, and this, you get scan lines going in. It really does everything it can possibly do to emulate a vintage, really crummy old monitor, and it seems like it seems like one of those apps that okay, that's funny, then you delete it. I was surprised at how completely this took me back. I was immediately like thinking about 6502 assembly language and how I can like get access track zero of this Electronic Arts game so I could unlock it and make copies for my friends. I could hear the disc dislike going. I could it was very, very pleasant. I also respect the fact that they really did this well. There are a lot of it's not a new idea, this sort of like vintage terminal emulator, but usually it's like, oh look, it's green text on a black background. Oh, and look, and it's a mono spaced old font. Oh, ha, ha, ha. It's no, the it reproduces the distortion from the curvature of the screen. And not only that, but you can adjust its settings so that it can be essentially a really good monitor, new out of the box in 1983, 1984, or it could be a crummy old one where the you've got a composite connector in there and it's a dirty connector, so it keeps like sort of fritzing out just a little bit. As a matter of fact, it has a great demo mode. Before if you download the demo version from the site, which is at secretgeometry.com, if you download the demo version, it continues to steadily degrade the quality of the terminal over the course of 5 or 10. You get 5 minutes of clean usage, and then just after like 20 minutes, it's just completely unusable, just like the Apple IIe used to use in the library back in junior high school. If you pay $20, you get to control all that. Not only that, but decide if you want an amber display, a white display. It was really cool because, I wasn't prepared for the effect it would have on me. Just like to a certain generation, the right tune from the 60s would take you right back to where you were the first time you heard this song. This app took me right back to where I was when I was using monitors like this. So just solely for nostalgia purposes, that's my pick of the week. It's called Cathode, and I believe it's available from the App Store, but you can also download it from secretgeometry.com. That's going to be our show for the week. But first, let's go around the horn and thank my wonderful, wonderful, wonderful guest. This really was a guest, starting with Jason Snell, vice president and man to be feared at the mighty MacBook publishing empire.
No. I'm very friendly, but thank you for having me.
That's why you're so feared. You get people into their confidence and then zzzt.
Yes.
Stop
giving away all my best material, Andy. Jeez.
Well, because I want to stay on your good side, and I figure that if I'm the first one to tell you that counter defenses against the zzzt have been developed, maybe I will be spared in the coming publishing.
Yes, that's good. Good point.
And folks can see your wonderful work at macworld.com. Tanya Angst is head of Take Control Publishing. And boy, your ebooks have kind of saved my bacon many, many times because I'm in the middle of writing something and like, wait a minute, is that exactly how this networking feature works? Or is this just how I think this networking feature works? And I will download a PDF and found out, oh, so I'm an idiot. And thanks to Take Control, only your payment processing system and myself will ever need to know the level of my ignorance. And so thank you.
Well, it's my pleasure. And of course, the main reason for the series, beyond all the other great reasons, is I could never run my own Mac if I didn't edit most of the books so I could read how you do stuff. It was a pleasure to take a break from the daily grind of getting people to write and edit books and just to hang out with you guys for a few hours.
Excellent. And you're at takecontrolbooks.com. You have a special deal in the offing just for MacBreak Weekly listeners. Is that true? Not true.
This is true. Yes. I just also have I have a little show and tell here. Wait. Yes. I just wanted to prove that even though... Come on. Having a little trouble with the camera here. Even though they're electronic books, they do exist. You can read them on your iPad, your iPhone, or your Mac, or your Kindle. And we've heard good things about the Nook and other ebook readers, too. We're offering MacBreak Weekly readers a 30% off discount on a trip through our shopping cart. We have the Take Control ebook series there. We also have MacWorld's Super Guide series there. And I assume that the folks at MacBreak Weekly have some magic way of making the coupon code available to everybody, but we have made a custom coupon code that people can key in, and you could also email me personally if you can't find that coupon code but saw this video broadcast. Yes.
And if you're watching, if you're watching this via the miracles of internet television, you are right now seeing superimposed that exact code. As a matter of fact, Let's really make this difficult for the editors. Uh-oh, it's Budget the Value Canary is flying in and delivering. Oh, what's that? Oh, you're landing on my hand right now with the coupon. Oh, well, if you just type in this coupon code at checkout, you will get 30% off the Take Control books of your choice. Thank you, Budgety the Budgie. Oh, well, thank you. It was nice to have you here. All right, well, maybe I... Or maybe that was just something that I imagined. This is, as usual, the proportion of Jack to Coke tends to filter depending on how much responsibility I have over the course of the show. So my apologies for that. Chris Breen, thank you very much. Where is the best place for people to see your specific and exciting brand of elegance?
That would be under Jason Snell's thumb. And you can find that at MacWorld.com. And
sounds like a song cue, Chris.
Yes, it is.
Chris, is that a song cue?
Yes, it is. Do you have that? You can cue that up. Yeah, I'm sure the editors would be
I smell lawsuit.
Yeah, exactly. So, yes, thank you very much, Andy. And of course, you can find me at MacWorld.com. You can hear me every other week hosting the MacWorld podcast. And of course, check out lynda.com and Peach Pit for my video training and books, respectively.
Awesome. Well, my thanks to everybody again. I know I saw all of you during MacWorld Expo, but there's something about the detachment and the technology interposing between conversations that makes these things so much more real, or at least to a social introvert such as me. I am Andy Anatko, tech columnist of Chicago Sun-Times. You can read my columns several times a month, usually 4 to 6 at suntimes.com, or you can check out my own site. Go to cwob.com, my celestial waste of bandwidth, for all the relative links. Well, that's it for this week. Until then, next week, that would be...
Brick, time's over! Get back to work, you gold bricks! That boss screen isn't fooling everybody! I know what happens when you hit Control-Shift-F8. Come on! Not paying you to listen to podcasts! Those 1029s aren't going to file themselves. Do you not know what kind of economy this is? How quickly I can get anybody from ITT Technical Institute to do what you do without benefits?
And see. Thanks. You see, you know what? It's not just that I want this part, Director. I need this
Until
part.
Until then. And by then, I mean next week.
It was called an improv. Okay? Not all of us go from a script. Not all of us have a staff who simply thrusts the teleprompters and index cards to say, you know, hey, I know that you're the corporate talking head shill, so here's the stuff that the money men want you to read on our behalf, Jason.
So were you refilling the Jack and Coke when you were off for a couple minutes? Was that what you were doing?
That's why I have Becca here for. She's a three.
Chat room saying, boy, the editors are going to have their work cut out for them for this episode. No, you think?
No. This is the point at which we can all get out our swearing. They're not in as bad a position as Chris, who edits the Bugle. At least we're not cussing. Bagels.
Sweet zombie.
Well, but if you really want to see blasphemy, we've already.
Yeah,
a lot about
pretty
the church.
Much. That,
I think
angry, it's an old game.
We're definitely gilding the crucifix there. There's no need to keep on going with that. And, yeah. if I don't find it in the next 20 seconds, then the I'm just going to say that it's microphone right here.
The editors will just release last week's podcast with a new. says
well,
the chat.
It's not as though the editors.
It's called podcast laundering. And they're the bees, speaking of angry.
It's not as though they don't like to take a little break themselves, you know, get themselves a freshen up. Some of that lilac water that they keep in the men's rooms. Oh, there it is. Okay, got it. Okay,